That's all coming up this morning. But first, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, looking at the real meaning of December 25th, that is, and the news you're not supposed to know. That is all coming up next on KBOO.
Finally, the housing market is recovering. Sales and prices are up. But wait, home ownership is still going down. That's right. The banksters are at it again. This time, they've bought up 200,000 foreclosed homes, bundled them to sell as rental-backed securities. A new financial instrument is born, creating a new housing bubble. Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, on A Deeper Look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Laura Gottsdiener, author of How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. That's this Thursday at 9:30 a.m. right here on KBOO.
Every year, a diverse and eclectic group of musicians and dancers come together for one night for a performance which celebrates and strengthens Portland's experimental music and performance arts scene, Untoward. Untoward is an annual benefit show for the Creative Music Guild. This year's lineup includes Grammys with Noah Bernstein and Dan Sutherland, Kayon Gaskin and Noelle Stiles, Dragging an Ox Through Water, Eternal Tapestry, and KBOO's 2013 Artist-in-Residence, Marissa Anderson. Untoward 2013 will take place this Saturday night, December 14th, at the Secret Society Ballroom, located at 116 Northeast Russell Street in Portland. Doors are at 8 and the show begins at 9. Your attendance will help support the work of the Creative Music Guild. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Untoward 2013, this Saturday, December 14th, at the Secret Society Ballroom.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Faux news! Time for war. Fight back on the war on December 25th. Headlines, the reason for the season. Stop the war on Saturnalia. Here's the latest. Saturnalian orgy banned at Walmart. What about our religious freedoms, say naked celebrants? We were depressed that we couldn't spread some holiday love and cheer. Angry atheists want to abort Saturn from Saturnalia, says Sarah Palin, selling her new book. It's okay to say. Io Saturnalia, says the pagan council of Rome. What's wrong? And just a personal comment, what's wrong with saying Io Saturnalia? Are we so politically correct that we can't say Io Saturnalia? Elementary schools ban symbolic Saturnalia booze and lion feeding. Children distraught. Children offer up a simple message to keep the Saturn in Saturnalia. Angry area pagans occupy town square, demand Saturn statue be placed on couch. Quoting, it's always been this way. Why should we change for trendy liberal Christian ideas? End quote. Faux news. We report, you repeat. Okay, actually, this is Press Watch, a counter-propaganda program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. And actually, you're more familiar with Saturn than you know. That image of the Grim Reaper that shows up as the old year in the cartoons is actually Cronos, or Saturn. He's depicted in ancient statues as an old man in a cloak. With a sickle in one hand and a sheaf of wheat in the other, Saturn represented the pre-hierarchical state of human affairs in ancient Roman Saturnalia celebrations. And he was also to be propitiated as the god of age and death, who could zap you with ill health if you didn't keep him happy. He killed off the old year with his sickle. Reaped it, you see, and the old sun he killed, and as the lengthening days became more obvious, after the solstice, after the planetary course correction every December 25th, it was his time to have a party. It was time for everyone to have a party for the coming of the new sun. So his statue was brought off his pedestal and put onto a comfy couch. Masters served slaves for a week or so. Everybody put on a silly hat called a pileus. Work was abandoned. Everybody got drunk. We know this from contemporary writings. This celebration was not welcomed by early Christian leaders and was in fact banned from time to time as a reversion to satanic paganism. But it always comes back because it's just kind of cheery when the whole planet changes course and the days get longer sunlight. You know how it feels, that December 24th, 25th feeling. It's just like, things are better somehow. Well, it's because the days are getting a little longer and you can feel it. And I'm into it. I love celebrating. And people have always celebrated, you know, the Northern Hemisphere. People have always celebrated, and I suspect also in the Southern Hemisphere, at the opposite solstice. It just feels good, and people are going to do it. But why the faux news, the Fox News hegemonic Christians have to get all worked up? Well, that's their gig. But this is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. And I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I invite you to stay tuned for the news you're not supposed to know and handy tips for destroying billionaire rule. Now, this past week, there was a fair amount of news concerning the giant commemorations and burial of one Nelson Mandela. At first, my reaction was just an acknowledgement that no one's immortal and that Madiba did indeed live a long time. It was fine. It's great. But after I saw that Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and even George Bush the Lesser were heading to Johannesburg, I started feeling kind of queasy about it. I and my friends were anti-apartheid activists at the University of Texas at Austin in the mid-80s. Shout out. I know there's a couple of you still listening. And I remember that Reagan considered Mandela to be a terrorist, and that we anti-apartheid activists, by extension, were considered terrorists as well. I remember constructing shanties on the UT campus, just stuff that we shoved together out of boards in an approximation of South African shanties. We're trying to show how institutional racism creates poverty, using that model to also try unsuccessfully to point to American apartheid. Not easy in Texas in 1986. I wondered at first who Amanda was and why she had no way to. No way to do what? Inside joke. The authorities at the university allowed the fraternities to commit arson on campus. It's incredible when I remember it. I mean, when I think about it, it just seems... I just can't believe that they would allow the frats to come on campus and actually set fire to the shanty because they hated it so much. And the UT regents were heavily invested. I think it was like $700 million they had in the apartheid system. And the students were calling them on it, and they were just furious. 24 times, at least. No, it was more than that. I lost count after 24 times. They burned it. The frats came at night and burned down the shanty with the approval of the police. Whereupon, as a gesture to free speech, I and others would go and rebuild it. And I haven't forgotten a letter that I received from a death squad, the World Anti-Communist League, that said that I was being watched and would be for life. We all got a letter like that. It said Christian Anti-Communist League on the letterhead, but I looked it up, and it's the death squad led by General John Singlob on behalf of U.S. policy and the U.S. secret police. So my response, you know, there were various responses to that when I think about what my friends did. A lot of them tried to ignore it, tried to forget it, kind of worried about it. I packed a pistol for more than a decade. It was just like, oh, yeah, come and get it. Because I think, you know, really, when you're faced with an armed death squad, you've kind of run out of polite options. And now we see U.S. policymakers pretending that Mandela was some sort of saint rather than an armed freedom fighter. How many cops did Nelson Mandela kill? Meanwhile, U.S. apartheid is worse than ever under the excuse of the drug war. Some of us are not fooled. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Last week, I said that a caller was a chemtrail nut and added insult to injury No, I added injury to insult, come think of it, by hanging up on him. I want to publicly apologize for doing that because it isn't the KBU way. And I knew it just as soon as I did it. I thought, oh, now you've done it, hothead. There is a right way, a wrong way, and the KBU way. I get in a rage when I encounter the whole chemtrail meme because I consider it to be an insidious diversion, a way to use popular scientific ignorance to mock and weaken dissent. I should have said that rather than being a butt about it. But this time I've got my hormone patches on. Next time I'm confronted with the contrail story, that'll be cool. I'll put the fire out in my hair first and deal with the issue rather than raging at the collar, because after all, this is KBOO community radio. And, you know, that implies a certain amount of respect. Okay, to the news. Two cases of pneumonic plague, more deadly than bubonic plague, have been reported in Madagascar. A health official has told the BBC it comes after it was confirmed there was a deadly outbreak of the bubonic plague in a village in the northwest of the island. Pneumonic plague can be inhaled and transmitted between humans without involvement of animals or fleas. It is the most virulent and least common form of plague, the BBC writes. It can kill within 24 hours. Bubonic plague hit a village near Madagascar's northwestern town of Mandritsara last week. At least 20 people were reported to have died. The Pasteur Institute of Madagascar confirmed the plague is spread because of poor hygiene. Tests taken from some bodies in the village showed that they had died of the plague. However, the Pasteur Institute did not say how many people had died. Pneumonic plague is caused by the same bacteria that occur in bubonic plague, the Black Death that killed an estimated 25 million people in Europe during the Middle Ages. But while bubonic plague is usually transmitted by flea bites and can be treated with antibiotics, pneumonic plague is easier to contract, and if untreated, has a very high case fatality ratio. Experts say, now I want to depart from the BBC script here and recall, if I hope I recall correctly. I actually, well, let's see. I think I've got this right. Anyway, bubonic plague. Is pneumonic plague, but in the case of pneumonic plague, what happens is that the bacteria count gets so high in an infected person that it can be spread through the lungs. It's actually just kind of blown out with the moisture of the body and any other exhalation of the body there. That's the most polite way to say that on regulated airspace, I suppose. And it's so many and such virulent bacteria that it just overwhelms the body's defenses. So when it gets to that point, when, during the Black Death, when it got to the pneumonic point, the disease had progressed to the point that it had these vast counts of bacteria, like billions of bacteria being exhaled with every breath of the dying person. And it's a hemorrhagic disease. And it's similar in a lot of ways to what's reported with Ebola. It just tears the body apart. And so the scary thing about this is that when they say, if untreated, has a very high case fatality ratio, well, it's really hard if you get a lot of people affected with this. The first and maybe the most rational reaction is run the other way, because you have to get antibiotics into the bloodstream very quickly to save the life of the person. I don't know if it's been done. Once a person has pneumonic form of bubonic plague. So returning, and before I return, I want to say also, the question is, there's going to be, because of evolution, you know, whether the Christians like it or not, there's evolution. And because of evolution, this is going to be a slightly different form. And is it more virulent? And is it more efficient? And how dangerous is it? We don't know today. And within a few days, we'll start getting some idea. Because it started in an area of poverty doesn't mean it's going to stay there. And frankly, if someone were in this room with me who had pneumonic form of bubonic plague, I would be doomed unless I could be rushed to the hospital. And that'd be the same with you. And it doesn't matter how rich or poor you are when it gets to that point. But returning to the article, Madagascar's Health Ministry Director General confirmed to the BBC that two cases of the plague had been reported. Last year, Madagascar had 60 deaths from bubonic plague. Once again, departing from the text, this happens in the U.S. as well, which is an indication of just how badly we treat Navajos. Going back to the International Committee of the Red Cross, warned in October that Madagascar was at risk of a plague epidemic. And BBC's Tim Healy was in the Capitol and said that health officials have now gone on to the remote area to investigate. Okay, I didn't say what the name of the Capitol is because I'm scared to pronounce it. Let me try Antananarivo, maybe. Prisoners on the island, this is a huge island, you know, on the east coast, let's see, southeast coast of Africa. Usually most affected by bubonic plague are prisoners because it's spread by unhygienic conditions. The prevalence of rats in Madagascar's prisons means the plague can spread easily. But as I was saying, and departing from this article, it's more complex than that and kind of pretty darn scary. Fukushima's operator, Tokyo Electric Power Company, on Friday detected record radiation levels in a duct that connects reactor buildings and an external ventilation pipe. This is from Voice of Russia. Thanks to Kathleen for tuning me onto this. Radiation found near the steel pipe connecting reactor buildings could kill anyone exposed to it within 20 minutes. According to local media, this is the highest level ever detected outside the reactor buildings. According to local broadcaster NHK, earlier, TEPCO said radiation levels of at least 10 sieverts per hour were found on the pipe. That would be a six-minute kill. No, it's not. No. I got that number wrong. Okay. 20 minutes. The ventilation pipe used to conduct radioactive gases after the nuclear disaster may still contain radioactive substances, TEPCO added. And this is where I have to speak for myself. And that's one of those phrases like, it may still contain radioactive substances. Well, how in the world would it not? It might be dangerous, as if they didn't know. But returning to the article, the water leakage has raised health concerns among Japan's neighbors. For instance, South Korea has been testing fish caught off the country's coast, according to South Korea's Fisheries Ministry. That's sort of like a fishies ministry, but it has Aries in it. Meanwhile, the chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission gave assurances that the radioactive well water will only reach the U.S. coast at safe levels. And everyone believes that. By way of conch, reader-supported news reports Detroit's recent bankruptcy eligibility was, you know, I'm going to backtrack on that. I have some more news on Fukushima, and it's about the political reaction. So what's Japan going to do politically about Fukushima? Well, according to Harvey Wasserman, writing in Counterpunch, it's Japan's new Fukushima fascism. When in doubt, go to fascism. Excuse me. Harvey Wasserman reports Fukushima continues to spew out radiation. The quantities seem to be rising, as do the impacts. The site has been infiltrated by organized crime. There are horrifying signs of ecological disaster in the Pacific and human health impacts in the U.S., but within Japan, a new State Secrets Act makes such talk punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Isn't that charming? Taro Yamamoto, a Japanese legislator, says the law represents a coup d'etat, leading to the recreation of a fascist state. I guess it'll have its recreation, too, if you remember how fascist states get their recreation. I believe I was talking about death squads earlier. It's 9:19 in the morning, Pacific time. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Presswatch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. KBOO 90.7 in Portland, other frequencies elsewhere. And you can contribute if you want to go online. Maybe you're already listening to me online. You can open up a tab, pull up kboo.fm, see that tip jar on the right? Well, chip in, you know, because KBOO is supported by anyone who cares. Except governments or corporations, but they don't care. But anyway, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has been leading Japan in an increasingly militaristic direction, Harvey Wasserman writes. Tensions have increased with China. Massive demonstrations have been renounced with talk of treason, but today it's Fukushima that hangs most heavily over the nation and the world. Tokyo Electric Power has begun the bring down of hot fuel rods suspended high in the air over the heavily damaged Unit 4. The first assemblies it removed may have contained unused rods. The second may have been extremely radioactive. But TEPCO has clamped down on media coverage and complains about news helicopters filming the fuel rod removal. And just speaking for myself, if you pull up TEPCO, they have a nice little video which shows you with outdated graphics and very smooth motion how incredibly safe the slow removal of these wonderfully straight rods is, but if you look at the real pictures, it's nothing like that. This thing blew up. It's warped. It's twisted. And these rods have to be pulled out pretty much without any major errors, because a major error, a dropping of a rod onto other rods creating a criticality, or anything that breaches the fuel pool water enough to drain it partly, will result in the biggest radioactive fire that's ever been seen. And yeah, much bigger than Chernobyl. And then it won't just be the sludge, the undersea sludge that's coming this way that'll be radioactive. It'll be a giant death cloud. A doomsday shroud, as they say in Dr. Strangelove. Gee, that'd be a good holiday film, wouldn't it? KBOO Portland, you're listening to Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Time is 9:21. Call in if you like. The number to call, 503-231-8187. If you have comments or questions. Under the new State Secret Act in Japan, the government could ban and arrest all independent media under any conditions at Fukushima, throwing a shroud, oh, there's that word, shroud of darkness over a disaster that threatens us all. And Wasserman writes, by all accounts, whatever cleanup is possible will span decades. The town of Fairfax, California has now called for a global takeover at Fukushima. More than 150,000 signees have asked the UN for such intervention. Much more on that at counterpunch.org. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187. Another program coming right up with Linda Olsen Osterlund at 9:30. And as I was saying, by way of conscience, Detroit's recent bankruptcy eligibility was achieved in part by the Michigan governor defying a court order. The Detroit czar defying a court order, and a federal bankruptcy court telling other federal and state courts that their orders and the cases before them challenging the constitutionality of state law and state actions simply don't matter. So what the hell is going on? Since December 3rd, the dominant media narrative following Judge Stephen Rhodes' bankruptcy court ruling suggests in oversimplified form that Detroit's one-man government can dispose of most of the city's estimated $18 billion debt and long-term liabilities by defaulting on pension contracts and selling off its art collection. This is essentially false as an overview and false in most of its details. It would be more accurate, reader-supported news writes, to say that Detroit is the victim of dishonest politicians colluding with banks and other corporate predators, and that we are now witnessing the late stages of an extended municipal lynching that is the natural expression of contemporary American capitalism. That this is essentially true as an overview, and in most of its details is supported in the question and answer format that follows in the article on reader-supported news. But first, here's the sanitized frame for the consensus narrative reliably delivered by American PAC journalism, in this case, New York Times, of December 4th under the headline, Detroit ruling lifts a shield on pensions, duplicated verbatim in the Boston Globe and the Houston Chronicle, quote, in a ruling that could reverberate far beyond Detroit. A federal judge held on Tuesday that this battered city could formally enter bankruptcy and asserted that Detroit's obligation to pay pensions in full was not inviolable, end quote. You would not know from coverage by the Times and most other outlets that this and other issues involving Detroit are under widespread court challenge, or that the current situation has been created by officials taking actions that would, in ordinary circumstances, be considered contempt of court. Law, that's for the little guys. Who cares about law if you got billions? And it is the billionaires that are driving this destruction. The failed state of Detroit is the future, your future, future for your children, grandchildren. It's all on track. It's on rails. And we are moving towards a failed state simply because it is so profitable for billionaires to disassemble all rights, privileges, and wealth of the vast majority of the people. We've seen this before when the Soviet Union collapsed and collectively owned organizations, businesses, factories were sold off dirt cheap to extremely corrupt people who were lionized as heroes. And people got mighty hungry. This is going to happen unless we stop it. Unless we stop the American acquiescence and or obsession with licking rich people's boots. Why? It just makes them more arrogant. There is also an article on Japan's new state secrecy law on the World Socialist website by John Watanabe, so you may want to look at that. There's an article by Neil Clark in Russia Today, which is about what I was talking about, the failed state. And it starts, over the last 30 years or so, we've witnessed a massive rise in inequality in Britain and other countries across the world as neoliberal economic policies replace the more collectivist social democratic ones, which dominated in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Publicly owned assets have been privatized, state provision cut back, and extraordinarily generous tax cuts have been given to the rich. In the U.S., the top 1% saw income growth of 31% between 2009 and 12, compared to growth of less than 1% for the bottom 90%. But I bet you've heard that before. And Dan is on the air. What's up, Dan?
Teresa, you are in fine fettle this morning,
Thank you, I must say.
just a comment of appreciation. I'm afraid of guns because of what I might do... perhaps to myself even, but it warms the cockles of my heart to think of you packing for 10 years in self-defense against the Yahoos that they badly misunderestimated you. And I just wanted to say that I like that picture.
Well, it was all about attitude. I mean, it's like I'm a pretty good shot, but I'm not an expert with a gun. And, you know, if I were attacked by a death squad, the military people, ex-military who work for World Anti-Communist League, I have a pretty low order probability of successfully fighting back. But the important thing for me was just being able to and just actually publicly, you know, I bought the gun from a notorious communist and talked about it very widely. And the whole idea was like this far and no further, no pasarán. That's it.
Very good. Carry on, Teresa.
Thank you. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187. Leslie is on the air.
Hey, Teresa.
Hi.
I recently heard KBOO that Geiger counters cannot be used to detect radiation in food and consumer products. So do you have any idea what a consumer could buy to detect radiation in food and consumer goods?
You have to spend a little more than a simple Geiger counter, and that's all that I have. Actually, I misplaced it. It's somewhere in my room, so it's even less useful right now. But a Geiger counter will at least give you some idea whether what you're approaching as food is extremely hot. But yeah, essentially that's correct. That there can be, I mean, certainly alpha emitters would not affect the sort of radiation counter that I got. It's just, you know, basic Geiger counter, and alpha doesn't penetrate its casing. So for that, you need more sophisticated instruments, and I think that, you know, as Japanese citizens are discovering, the investment is necessary, and it might be best for maybe 5 or 10 people to get together and buy one of the more expensive testing instruments. And if you look on the web for radiation testing instruments and food testing, radiation testing, you will find them, and you will see that they cost thousands of dollars. Well, that music tells me that it's time for Linda Olson Osterlund, so stay tuned to KBOO Portland.
Friday, on Positively Revolting, our guest will be renowned mythologist, psychologist, author, and storyteller Michael Mead. We'll be discussing Michael's essay, Gratitude and the Gift of Life, insights into the holiday season. So if you are interested in understanding soul and connection in the midst of consumer insanity, tune in Friday, December 13th, from 8 to 9 a.m. on KBOO, your community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 19th year of the Portland Revels.
The Portland Rebels will perform 11 shows between December 6th and December 15th. That's the Portland Rebels, December 6th to the 15th at the Scottish Rite Center in downtown Portland. More information about the show can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look. I'm your host, Linda Olson-Osterlund. Our topic today is the new housing bubble and Wall Street's growing rental empire. My guest is Laura Gottesdiener. She's a journalist who has written for Rolling Stone, Ms. Magazine, The Huffington Post, and many others. She's the editor of Waging Nonviolence, and she's also the author of a book titled A Dream Foreclosed, Black America and the Fight for a Place to Call Home. It was published in August by Zuccotti Press, and it's won praise from people like Naomi Klein, Alice Walker, Ralph Nader, and Noam Chomsky. Quite a list of support. She's also the author of a November 26th article on Tom's Dispatch titled How Wall Street Has Turned Housing Into a Dangerous Get-Rich-Quick Scheme Again. So welcome to KBOO, Laura Gottesdiener.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for joining us. So let's start with this housing recovery we've been seeing. I, as a person who am a renter, have been watching the housing prices beginning to come up again here in Portland, Oregon, not as fast as in other places, but definitely a sign. I thought it might be a good sign, but it confused me because all other signs say that the average American is making less income, suffering more. So